You're listening to The Point. We are talking with Mary Malloy, maritime historian and author. Her fiction series, Lizzie Manning Trilogy, includes The Wonder Chamber, The Wandering Heart, and Paradise Walk. Not in that order. I guess the first one was the Wandering Heart. Paradise Walk was second, and The Wonder Chamber is the new one that's
just coming out.
All right. So the beauty of fiction is that you can create any story you want. So some fiction writers are very careful about facts, others not so much. And it seems like you're somewhere in the middle. You know, you there is a lot of historical accuracy, but sometimes you have to change it a little bit to fit the story.
Right.
So where is that line?
You know, if people ask me how much is historical and how much is fictional, I can't really answer that question unless we practically go through page by page. Mm-hmm. And so there are, and in each of these books, I had a different sort of concept in mind. The first one was really, the idea was to start from a collection of things, but very quickly the information begins to be revealed in part through documents and then also through paintings is one mm-hmm. of the things that she looks at. So I made up every painting in the book, but I based each of them on paintings by the painter that I was discussing. And so there's, you know, this big Gainsborough painting of this family that's hanging mm-hmm. And that would be a completely appropriate thing for the family. You know, it has the age mm-hmm. of it and the status of it and the wealth of it, you know, that they would have hired right. Gainsborough, who lived near where they were. So there are paintings by these known painters. And I didn't want this to just be name dropping. I mean, mm-hmm. I wanted it to be something that that would have a substance. So that part of who they would have hired, you know, is correct. Mm-hmm. But every painting is made up, yeah. every single one. And so the second book was based on this walk, which was the landscape. But the other thing was that I was interested in the literature. So mm-hmm. it starts from Canterbury Tales, but you walk through this place that's got all this Arthurian legend as well, and especially mm-hmm. in Glastonbury. And so I wanted to deal with some of that Arthurian legend because it's a really interesting part of the landscape right. there. And so that gets sort of woven into it. And then because one of Lizzie's pals, the character of the librarian, Jackie, comes to join her, you know, they talk about books. They talk mm-hmm. about works of literature that are tied to the landscape. So there is... you know, the second book, I'd say more has landscape and literature. And then the third book was really to get back to objects mm-hmm. as the central part of it. So, you know, all the objects, all the paintings are all made up.
You know, I was going to ask you, what about that Michelangelo candlestick?
Michelangelo candlestick is made up but, oh my God, see, wouldn't it be a great thing?
It would. Yeah. And, you know, what happens to it? I'm not going to give that away. But, I thought that was a great just side mystery in itself. Yeah. What happened to it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's the kind of thing, too, that is interesting about works by major guys. I mean, Michelangelo, there was a little statue of his that was in a building of New York, mm-hmm. in New York, that nobody knew was his for, you know, generations. And then suddenly somebody looks more closely at it and says, whoa, look at this.
So that's where the inspiration came from.
It was that the idea that this could be anywhere and people wouldn't know what it is. Yeah. And so consequently, it's, you know, it has sort of disappeared. Sometimes you know that where it's lost and sometimes you don't. But, you know, I was trying to make something that could have happened, but it didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say that there is the Del Arco angel candlestick mm-hmm. is absolutely real.
That
so, yeah, you know, part of this is based on this great altarpiece in Bologna. And I just added bits to it.
Because you can.
That's right. That's the great thing about fiction.
All right. So this photograph that you're talking about that Lizzie finds a sketch. And so she wants to recreate this exhibit around. This is sort of her centerpiece. Okay, this is what the exhibit's going to be. And she gets to go to Bologna, as you're saying, into this fabulous house. And you can't believe what's in there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I guess, every historian's or curator's dream come true.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, you have to throw in some characters because she can't just easily walk into this house as it seems and take what she wants for her exhibit. You've got to have some
There's got to be some obstacles, yes.
So talk about the character of Patrick.
Well, this the relationship between Lizzie and this this house and this collection is that she works at a college called St. Patrick's College in Charlestown, Massachusetts, which is also a, you know, college I made up, but I'd love to work there.
Yeah, sounds like a great place.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm thinking Lizzie's got a Facebook page and she works at St. Patrick's, you know, college and, you know, where is it? So, but partly this was inspired by, you know, ideas that I had been thinking about. And then Downton Abbey, which I know you're showing a film of, but the character in there of Cora, who's a, you know, American heiress who marries an English nobleman whose family has lost all their money. I was thinking about that and the process of that happening in the late 19th and early 20th century, where there were a lot of these industrial fortunes. And so it's the sort of backstory of the college is that this Irish immigrant who becomes wealthy in the textile trade during the Civil War and after, his daughter marries an Italian nobleman. And that's the connection between this family in Bologna and the family in Boston. And so they have this collection that goes back to the Renaissance and are going to loan part of it. And so Lizzie gets to go there. So the son of that woman, who she becomes very intrigued by and reads her correspondence and things that have been given to the school, the college library, that she goes through letters that were written back during World War II when the daughter of the founder of the college is in Italy during all of the war, and her son, who still lives in the house. Mm-hmm. And he's a little bit of a loon.
Yeah. But it's a really interesting because he has these moments of clarity.
Yeah.
And then moments of, you know, craziness. And so, again, here's Lizzie the detective trying to figure out, okay, she's got these letters and she's, as you say, very intrigued by this woman. And she wants to know the whole, she wants to know the story. And then I thought it was also very nice that she obviously wants to bring the best that she can back for the exhibit, but she's also concerned about what this will mean to Patrick, because he will, you know, he loves these things. This is really his life. And she's thinking, what's going to happen when he comes home and these things are not there?
And that's the difference between getting things from a museum and taking things out of a house, is that people who live in the house, it is going to make a difference to them.
Yeah, it makes you think. All right. So what this latest book starts out with a mummification. Something that you already knew, or is this something you had to research? Because I'm reading going, this seems really accurate. A little more information than I wanted to know, but it seems pretty accurate.
I had actually been looking at mummies for another project and just decided that it was a really interesting process. And, you know, again, it's part of our grisly macabre nature, I think, to find human remains on exhibit.
Well, yeah.
Curious.
And, yeah. And I mean, there is this, you know, thing sitting back, and it's, of course, you got the alligator. You've got all these like curiosities, I guess. You know, there's these fabulous works of art, and then there are these curiosities.
And some of the things that are just sort of lumps of something, and you know, 300 years ago, it was a meaningful thing to somebody, and now it's really hard even to distinguish.
Exactly. All right. So many of historical novels are set in the past. Yours are all set present day. And I'm guessing it's because what you really want to convey here is the process. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I have actually written another novel, which I is not published, that is set in Ireland in the 13th century. And that one I really did want to do something that stayed within a period. I mean, this, I loved the process of writing these books because it gave me a chance to, you know, talk about how you do historical work and the kinds of things that are there. But I did also want to try something that has a more omniscient narrative voice, so that all of these, even though they're not in the first person, they all have the perspective of Lizzie, that's mm-hmm. that's how we see everything. So I have written this other book. Again, I don't have any plans to publish it yet, though I'm looking for, you know, ideas.
You may.
Right. But it's set in Ireland in the medieval period. And again, it has a sort of central female character. But and it's set at a time when Ireland is really in flux from, you know, the clan system, but also it's set at a monastic settlement. And when as the English are coming in and things are changing, that was a different process for me. It's interesting. But, you know, each of these books has a sort of different perspective.
Yeah. But I would imagine, though, you have a lot of fun with the I mean, when you're writing nonfiction, there's so much, you know, fact checking. You know, this you can just go, well, it fits off a little. It's OK. I can just have some fun with it.
I do have a lot of fun with it. I try not to make it's great that I can make up paintings and works of art. And I love all that. I try not to make the major stuff go too far from what's actually potentially possible.
And I would assume that because the process is so important to you, the process is true.
Yes.
I'm just thinking, you know, in some of the things with like this latest book where they are getting some of these things ready to be shipped to for the exhibit, you know, and they're wearing gloves. And, you know, I've forgotten his name now. The guy, Carmine?
Carmine, yes.
That's helping her. And he's like, you must wear, you know, we must follow the correct process here. And but she thinks about that. And she, you know, there's a club that she wonders, you know, who's touched it before her. And, you know, she does break the rules a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? And touches something. Yeah.
And actually, I was really looking to sort of talk about some of those issues for museums, too. Over time, if everybody touches something, it damages it, you know, and that's just the fact of life. But to touch the thing is a very powerful thing for me. And there, that particular club you're talking about is Marquesan Uu Club. I'm actually working on a project on those right now. And so I wanted to put it in there, even though the one that I put in that collection is about 200 years earlier than the earliest one we know of. But those clubs are something that they went all over the world in the late 18th and early 19th century. And they were so dispersed that there are none of them that are left in the Marquesa Islands where they were made. And so I'm trying to work now on a global census of those clubs. I'm calling it the Uu Diaspora. And it is, so I placed it in that book. Yeah. And, you know, there's actually, that's
things.
One of the things about writing these that's really kind of a fun thing is that there are a lot of things. I think they call them Easter eggs if you put them into a video, but they're like little gifts to people that I love. Things, I mean, there are two characters in this book that are actually named after my sister's cats. And there are characters that are actually Carmine's named after my dentist, just because
funny.
He has such a gorgeous, you know, Italian name. But there are lots of things like that are just the personal parts of it that are you know, nice to be able to do.
Okay, so you're a musician and a singer, and in each of your books you include at least one song, right?
I try to, yes.
Yeah, so given how important music is to you, I'm surprised there isn't more music.
I know, I didn't want to, you know, again, this is part of sort of distancing the character from myself, though.
Yeah. All right. And so, like many authors, you do have a day job, as we're mentioning. It seems like you have several.
Yeah.
So, do you mostly write then when you're at, so you mentioned you write at night. So, I'm wondering, when do you sleep? You know, you work during the day, you've got these jobs. I mean, do you write every day or is it spurts? I mean, how often do you get to sit down and actually write?
I do not write every day. I write every day when I'm at sea. And again, this is a strange thing, but it's because it does not seem like it would really be a very good environment for writing. I mean, you are constantly in motion. It's it's blistering hot down in the South Pacific where I have been writing these things. And, you know, there's fairly constant interruptions. Nonetheless, I find that there's something about, and I have a tiny little desk. I have a small cabin and the desk is actually the door of a cupboard, you know, that falls down onto a, you know, little plank. And it's about as wide as my computer. And I have to put my foot against the wall to keep from pitching my head into it ship lurches, which it frequently does. But you get into a rhythm there that is really good. So I try to set aside 4 to 5 hours a day while I'm on the ship. And then, you know, I have other things to do. But that is a place where there aren't other distractions. I mean, all the distractions are within the small world of the ship. Mm-hmm. And so that is actually a really good place.
So will Lizzie Manning be back?
I don't know. I had a contract for these three books and had sort of pictured them this way. But I do find that I love the character. I love working with her. And this does describe a process of things that I like working with. So I hope so.
They're a fun read for sure. Absolutely. All right. So, but you will, of course, continue your nonfiction writing.
Right. My next big project is a book on the history of museums.
So that will be out, about a year or so?
Actually, I don't have a, I'm in the process of working out a publishing agreement, but I don't have one yet.
Yeah. So now, let me ask you about the nonfiction books. Do you pick a project that you're interested in? Like, you know, the Sam Bellamy obviously would be a character you're interested in, and the museum, history of the museum. Is it something that you are, you know, working on in another aspect of your life? I mean, how do you decide what you're going to write about?
I find that most projects present themselves to me. And sometimes, so that the Sam Hill book was one that I had been interested in him in a very small way as part of the larger story of Boston traders on the Northwest Coast. But I came across his journals, which were interesting. And then I came across the journals of guys who served on his ship. And mm-hmm. there it was the fact that the story that they told being so different from his mm-hmm. that first attracted me. But then I found that he was somebody that really could tell us a story about American expansion in the late 18th century, because he was in all of these different places. And the fact that, you know, he was in the Columbia River when Lewis and Clark were there, and mm-hmm. he was in Japan. He's the first American to stay in Japan. He was in Chile during the Chilean Revolution. He was a way to talk about a lot of those incidents that I was interested in. So he became the sort of, center of a much bigger story. The History of Museums book has been growing for a long time. I teach a course on that at the Harvard Extension School, and I, have searched the literature for something that I could use in my own class. Mm. And I find that the more I've taught the class, the more I have ideas that I would like to be able to share in that. So,
I'm looking forward to that one. That's going to be, we'll
have you back. I'll come back.
Absolutely. Mary Malloy is a maritime historian and author of both fiction and nonfiction. Today we're talking about her Lizzie Manning trilogy, The Wandering Heart, Paradise Walk, and The Wonder Chamber, which is coming out soon. Thanks so much for being here, Mary. Always fun to talk to you.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.